This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 509.
I tell people, I said, grind now so you can shine later, spending the fruits of your investments. So, you know, believe it or not, that power of compounding, you know, taking that one first house I bought, flipped it, bought two more homes, and then that first shopping center, I 1031 exchanged the Whittier property into another one, office building, and then a high rise, and then a multiple high rises in a portfolio I bought as a group. So I didn't buy a Ferrari.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? It's Brendan Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David Green. David, man, I didn't have a good nickname for you today, but what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. The Northern California and the Southern California markets are softening up a little bit. I think a lot of the buyers that were competing over the houses just got frustrated and backed out. So we're actually able to put people in contract again. I don't know if I mentioned, but I'm looking for another house for myself to house hack, maybe a couple of them. So if for those people that were like, hey, I really want to get a house, but it's too hot, some of that is shifting. The buyer psychology is... It's like in Gladiator. Remember they talked about like the mob? They'll be with you and then they'll be against you. It happens very quickly. It's fleeting.
Fleeting. Well, good luck, man. You deserve something great.
Thank you.
Speaking of something great, you like that transition? Today's episode is with Manny Koshbin. So if you guys don't know Manny, huge Instagram account. You can find him at Manny Koshbin, K-H-O-S-H-B-I-N. So Manny, and he has 2.2 million followers over there on Instagram, and for good reasons, got an amazing account. But here's the cool thing about Manny. Manny has been investing in real estate for like 20 some years, almost 30 years. Very, very successful. Bought in almost $1 billion worth of real estate. Does most of it, or really almost all of it, with his own money. So it's not like syndicating. He just has snowballed wealth to a massive level. And he does a lot of what's called value add. So this first half of the show, it's really about his story today. You're going to hear about a story about, you know, being homeless, working at Kmart. I think he said before we were recording, he was making $3 an hour at Kmart. And that to where he is today, buying some incredible real estate, some huge deals, and some really amazing cars. We talk a little bit about the car thing today as well, which you'll see on his Instagram. It's not quite what you might think. I was actually pretty surprised at his kind of logic behind it. Now I'm like, I'm going to go buy some cool cars. So you hear about that and more coming up. Also, make sure you listen towards the end of the interview. He lays out a bunch of tips for adding value to real estate, how to dramatically make the price go up, especially when it comes to bigger deals, but really any real estate. That concept and some of the tips he gives there are going to make some people listen to this show millions of dollars over their career. So listen for that and more all coming up. But first, let's get to today's quick tip.
Today's quick tip is... avoid the temptation of wanting to just carbon copy somebody else's success. It's so easy to say, how did you do it? Okay, control C, control V. Now I've done it. The problem is nothing in life actually works that way. In today's episode, Manny...
It's command on a Mac. It's command C, command V. That's why it doesn't work that way.
I do use a Mac. I just don't like being labeled as a Mac.
Okay, yeah.
What was that really funny joke you had? I'm a millennial. We don't like labels. I think that's just still such a hilarious joke. Yeah.
I don't think that was supposed to be a joke. I think I was saying that legit. Anyway, keep going.
Well, it was funny to me. Today's guest, Manny, describes how his deep understanding of the fundamentals of real estate, not esoteric rocket science level stuff, really basic, simple things that he has mastered at a high level, allows him to find ways to make properties work that somebody would miss if they're just looking for command C. It doesn't work, Brandon. You got to say control C, control V.
I don't know. Command, yeah, control C does flow, but then it's just wrong. I mean, if you're okay being wrong, David, that's okay. If you're okay with that, but you know, how you do anything is how you do everything.
I don't know if it's politically correct to talk about commanding. We should probably, I guess controlling is just as bad. All right. This quick tip has gone completely off the rails.
Remember with Open Apple, it was like Open Apple C, Open Apple V, but that was too long. So they changed it to command on my little Apple keyboard now.
I don't remember that, but there is an Oregon Trail reference later in this show that would probably work well with your Open Apple for that age demographic. So quick tip summed up. Don't look for ways to copy someone else's success. Instead, focus on mastering the thing you're getting into. And then the ways that you will be successful will make themselves known to you.
Yeah, it's like that quote from, I think, everyone has said this, but success leaves clues, right? It's like success isn't a follow this step-by-step the cookbook. It's not a cookbook, right? But there's a lot of clues out there and a lot of really good ingredients that then you can learn to be a great chef. So how's that for an analogy, man? Look at that. I'm taking over your analogy role.
You would drop your mic, but it's got an arm, so it just hangs there.
I could push it down just like that. That's like the new thing. Instead of dropping mics, it's smashing mics.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Oh, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is, we're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day, and I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
All right. And with that said, I think it's time to get into our episode today with Manny Cochbean. You guys are going to love the show. I loved it. I think he's a fantastic guy doing some really big stuff in real estate. Very smart, very driven. And y'all going to hear more from Manny right now. Anything you want to add before we jump in, David?
No, let's get to it.
Manny, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast, man. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thanks. So let's dive into your story a little bit. I know you got kind of a crazy long entrepreneurial journey, and then we'll get from that into real estate. So where did this all begin?
Oh my God, this is going to take a couple of hours, but I'll shorten it. I'm from Iran originally, and back 30 years ago, there was an Iran-Iraq war. And when you reach age 14, you're automatically drafted into the army. And my dad had 7 brothers, and 4 of them got crippled from being injured in the war. So 2 weeks before my 14th birthday, my dad decided to bolt and didn't want me to get pulled into the army. And that was a very sudden decision on his part. And with, you know, 4 kids, in short order, jumping ship from one country to another, it takes a lot of balls and a lot of guts. And At the time, I didn't realize what he's doing. But we arrived in U.S. in 1985 with a little over $2,000. And my dad was promised a job at a gas station pumping full-service gas. When we arrived here, that job had gone away, and that puts us on a very bad spot. So, you know, we were pretty much homeless. Now, my dad was educated. He was a CPA by trade, and he was able to get a job, but it took a couple of months. So for that couple of months, you know, we had to live in a car. It was very hard times, you know, six people in a 1972 Datsun station wagon. And I turned all that, you know, guilt. I had a lot of guilt because everybody's suffering because of me. So I turned that into motivation. Now, mind you, I didn't speak a word of English. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have no money. And I didn't have any, you know my way around. It's a new place, right? So it was a lot of obstacles I had to overcome. But my first job was, every time I took the trash out to the dumpster, I noticed people leave stuff outside the dumpster. I'm like, hey, this is a nice chair. You know, it's not broken, or a toaster, or a black and white TV, or what have you. So I would haul those back to my apartment patio. And then after a while, you know, I realized, hey, we got to have a place to sell these. Across from our apartment, there was Orange Coast College. They had a swap meet every weekend. So me and my brother hauled those across the street and got a couple of spots. And that was my first business for 2 years. And until 16, I was able to legally work, and I applied at Kmart as a clerk and mopping the floors, collecting shopping carts. And I got promoted within the 2 years I was there, three times. At the end of the day, I knew that's not where I want to stop. And it's a stepping stone. So I was always getting the Sunday paper looking for employment opportunities. I found a company that sold, you know, nuts and candies door to door. It's a multi-level marketing. I applied for it. Within 3 months, I was at one of the top salespeople. So one day I'm at Price Club. Back then it wasn't Costco, it was Price Club. And I did a quick math on the cashews and jelly beans or jujubes. I'm like, wait a minute, this company's selling half 8 ounce bags to me at $3. And if I buy a whole pound, it's, you know, $1.50. So I can, you know, save like 70% on the cost. So I went into business for my own. I already had my customers. So I started my own business, UWP, Unlimited Wholesale Product. I was a little over 18 years old. I had to have my dad co-sign for a small office for me. And I went to payphones and earned $100 a week. Tear up my phone number, and I got four employees. Within 6 months, I was making $4,000 a month. To me, that was like the American dream, being 18. After that, I got caught by health department, and I didn't know I needed a health permit. Every time you repackage food for resale purposes, you have to have a permit, and I didn't know that. And they shot me down. I had $20,000 saved. And my dad's buddy says, why don't you buy a gas station? You could buy a 90%, you know, get a 90% SBA financing and buy a gas station. And a lot of the gas stations back then were mechanical pumps. They were going through the modernization to digital. And once the oil company picked your location to convert, it would skyrocket the value, right? Triple, you know, 3-4x. And the guy that was a broker selling gas station goes, you know, this mobile gas station off the Crenshaw Boulevard and 405, I have a very good feeling mobile oil company is going to pick it next. So we made an offer. We're in escrow, 90-day escrow for $170,000 or so for the gas station. I went to mobile school, learned how to measure the tanks, run the snack bar. So I became a mobile dealer. It cost me $3,500. Then the loan guy turned out to be a fraud. Told me to go to Palace Brothers Bank, open a savings passport account with $20,000 and put his name on it so he can access, you know, for appraisal, you know, all these other fees. Within 3 months, there was no money left in my account. He had written processing fees to himself, and he ended up going to jail later on. But anyhow, I lost all my money. And at that point, I'm like, all right. I called Winston Tire's manager, one of the shops in Montebello, California, that used to buy a lot of nuts from me, Ruben Padilla. Hopefully he's still alive. Great guy. And I said, Ruben, I'm back to square one. I have no money and I need a job. He goes, come on down. He hired me as an assistant manager. And while working there, every time I see a Porsche, Mercedes, I always ask him, hey, what do you do? What do you do for a living? And 9 out of 10 times with either a loan company or a real estate company. occasionally you had a doctor, or an attorney, but for most part, it was real estate related. So I'm like, you know what? I got to get into real estate. This one guy that had a 911 Cabriolet, you know, he said he owns a mortgage company. I said, hey, I would love to work. He goes, I love your energy. I'll hire you as a loan officer. So I worked for him for a few months. I learned the ropes. And within 6 months, I was like his best processor. But I wanted to go ahead and work for myself, right? I wanted to make a lot more money. So I found a broker to partner with, and I opened my own mortgage company. And this was 1992, 93. And we got lucky. I got auction.com. Back then was REDC, Real Estate Resolution Disposition Trust, something like that. And I became their primary lender. So this is mid-90s. There was a big recession in Orange County in real estate. A lot of overbuilt new project in housing. And they wanted to auction these off, right? So they would give me one of the condos out of like a 60-unit complex. I would set up my loan officers there. And they had every bidder had to come to our to my unit and get pre-approved before they get a number to go out and bid on the auction. So we did $300,000 in 1 year, and that was huge for me. This is 1994. And then after that, we start doing a lot of refinances, run full page ads. Anyway, long story short, I made pretty good money for a couple of years, and then rates went up in 94. Greenspan increased the rates 50 basis points in one FOMC meeting, and we're like, whoa, we just lost 60 refis. Because we didn't pre-lock him until we get ready for loan docs to get more rebate, right? Long story short, I had about $150,000 saved. My partner, the broker, also had savings. He goes, why don't we go into discount store? Everyone's doing 99 cents only. Why don't we do 79 cents plus? So we took a 10,000 square feet warehouse in Santa Ana and opened a discount store. It was doing fantastic. And we opened a second location. We were going to do 10 of them and go public. We had all these big visions. And then a discount supermarket opened right next to us, Food for Less, opened literally right next to us, right next to us, within like 30 feet away from our store. On their grand opening, our sales dropped 50%. And it continued. It continued. Within a year, we were upside down. We were not only making the $30,000 a month we were making, we were losing $15,000 a month. And my partner says, you know what? I don't want to put any more work into this. If you want, you can take it over. So I cut him $15,000 check. I bought his 50% share out. And then I had to get to work. I said, I told my parents, they were in Oregon at the time. I said, you need to come down. So I had 11 employees. I laid off a few. I had my parents help me out. And I got the sales back up. And then I sold it. During this whole time, while I was selling it, we had a buyer in escrow that defaulted on the purchase, citing my landlord is not fair, didn't give me good favorable lease terms. So we end up in court. While I'm sitting with my landlord for our case to be heard, my landlord, mind you, back then, Mr. Dave William, he was worth, you know, $600 to $700 million probably back then. Very, very prominent. Yeah. He came in the 50s and started buying commercial real estate and kept reinvesting. Long story short, he told me, Manny, you've been my tenant for 5 years. I love your energy. You put in 200% a day. But why are you slaving away? Why don't you put this energy into real estate? You know, like I did. I came in the 50s. I started with one small property. And I'm like, well, you need money, right? As you know, I don't have any money right now. You know, and he goes, well, once you sell your supermarket, come and see me. So that's how things worked out. Again, when I sold the supermarket, finally, I dabbled with the stock market a bit. All my buddies were making money. And I owed $200,000 on my credit cards, and I got $185,000 net from escrow. So I was still negative net worth. I'm like, all right, I busted my butt. I'm not paying off my credit cards and still going to owe $15,000 after. So I opened the E-Trade account. I bought AOL, E-Trade, Brokit Communication, all these stocks that were splitting 3-4-1 at every earning announcement. And I more than doubled my money. I think close to triple by September 1999. And I said, okay, you know, enough is enough. This is too good to be true. I'm going to pay off my credit card and go ahead and call Mr. Williams and get started with real estate. So I left $85,000 in my E-Trade. I said, hey, if I can do 185 to this much, I can do the same thing with 85,000, right? So I called Mr. Williams. He set me up with his top broker and sold me a shopping center in Whittier. I put $200,000 cash down. And he basically taught me, you want to buy real estate, you can add value. You want to buy real estate that's good location. So a lot of the strategies I use now, it was basically what the broker, his broker taught me back then. And long story short, that was the journey of my real estate investment. I've probably done close to $1 billion in real estate. I've never added it up, but now my average deal size is between 20 to 40 million. I got two deals in escrow now, one for 41 million. And then the one I'm buying from my headquarters is 22 million for myself to occupy. And it's been a fantastic journey. I've made a lot of mistakes. I lost $5 million on one deal, single tenant. So I've learned a lot of mistakes, and I don't want other young investors that are getting into the business to make those mistakes. That's why I have my program. And I love passing on the torch, and I enjoy hunting for the right deal, something, you know, I can add value, transform the property, like the one I'm going to buy in headquarters for Koshbink Company. And in a nutshell, that's really my journey. It's been fantastic. I retired my parents 20 some years ago, bought them a ranch. I just bought them a really nice house at Orange Park Acres. And, you know, I feel like they took the risk to bring me here, and now I owe it to them. And in a nutshell, I left a lot of things out. I've done a lot of other businesses too. I've started a mechanic, you know, auto mechanic business, door to door, changing people's oil, brake pads, calipers, engine overhaul. Yeah.
In high school or in college, I was going to do a mobile oil change business, and I didn't.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always had, you know, one of the secrets I want to say to staying afloat and ahead of everybody else was I always had a side hustle too. I used to get up super early and go to 7-Eleven, pick up the Auto Trader. It used to come out every Thursday. So I would go up 2 a.m. So as soon as I would find out what's their first drop, which 7-Eleven is their first drop on their distribution. And then I would get in my car with a flashlight, boom, 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 find deals that are priced lower. And back then I was buying a lot of Honda Accords and pickup trucks, things like that, Toyota MR2s. And I used to buy those, do a massive detail on it, and then just put it back on AutoTrader and sell it, make a few $100. So I always had a side hustle. You know, the whole thing is don't just stand around for an opportunity. There is opportunity. Just do what's in front of you until something better comes.
That's so good. Man, there's about 1 million things I want to unpack in here. Why don't we start? I want to know why did you go into, I mean, you started with commercial real estate, like the big stuff. Let's go into the real estate specifically. You started with a shopping center. Most people that I know start with, like, you know, a house, right? Or maybe they buy a duplex if they're really crazy. But you just jumped into the big game, and it sounds like that's basically what you've been playing ever since, is the commercial real estate game. So why is that? And do you recommend that for other people? Should people start small, or can they jump in at that level?
Well, let me backtrack. My first property actually was a single family home. It was 1996. Yeah. So when I had the supermarket, 96, I bought a house. It was bank owned for $142,000. I only used $1,800 to buy it. I used FHA financing, and I had, you know, the bank credit me 3% for non-recurring closing costs and all that good stuff, you know. And then I rented it out. A year later, sold it for $80,000 more. And then I did 1031 exchange. I bought two other homes. But my big money has always been commercial real estate. You know, from the first shopping center in Whittier, then I did another one. A couple of years later, I made $1 million on the single flip. But I didn't have that much money to begin with. I've had my ups and downs, as you know. I've been close to broke twice in my past 35 years. And what I recommend people to do, housing is the easiest way to start investing in real estate, right? And the best way to buy it, you buy a property, you can add value, and it's selling at a discount. And of course, it has to check off a few other boxes, right? Location, density, and there's a lot I teach in my courses. But no, I started with a single family home. It was my first property.
All right. And so now you buy these large deals today. I want to go to the end of your story, and then maybe we'll fill in. When you're talking buying a $40 million property, are you syndicating that? Like, where you're raising money from a bunch of different investors and they all pool money to buy it and you're leading it? Or are you just buying it? Like, is that just your company? You put the money in? Like, how does that function today?
Yeah. So I've never syndicated, but this particular property, I am dabbling a bit to maybe raise 20% from my members. A lot of the members in the group, they're always asking me, okay, the good deals are out of reach, you know, for us. But can we put a little bit with you to Coinbase? So I opened it only to my group, only as a, you know, only because they demanded and asked me so many times. Not that because I need the money, but the previous deal I sold for $41 million a year and a half ago, that was Koshbink's Landing, that I bought for $27 million and sold it for $41 million. So all of it has been my money up to now. And I still don't have any partners as of right now to answer your question. It's all my money.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I mean, I hear guys, you know, we have people on the show and I even talk about, you know, I buy a $40 million or $50 million property, but they're all syndicated. It's not like I own it. I own a very small piece of a very large business that buys it. But I'm always so impressed to talk to the guys like, no, I just buy this. And you didn't start out buying a $40 million property, right? That first deal was significantly cheaper, but it kind of snowballs, right? Over the course of the last 20 years, you've snowballed it into this machine that you can buy a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. Honestly, real estate's the best asset class to build wealth if you know what you're doing and you're patient. And just like anything else, it's cyclical. And I like to say I'm a cyclical investor. You know, I double, triple down in recessions throughout the recovery and expansion in the economy cycle. I try to scale as much as I can. I love leverage. Leverage could be your best friend and it could be your worst enemy. Depends when you're leveraging and what you're leveraging on, right? So I've been through many recessions, but the real estate is the best asset class. Gives you the tax write-off. You can pull out money, tap into your equity tax-free, cash out refi. And when you sell it, you can kick the can down the road on capital gain taxes. And there's a lot more to it, you know, doing acceleration on depreciation, which is cost segregation, a lot of things I teach in my program.
Yeah, that cost segregation stuff has been a game changer for me. All right, so let's. I'm going to do a few questions that are maybe questions like that our audience is wondering from somebody who's been a seasoned veteran of the real estate world for 20 years. First one, you've been through ups and downs in the market. Where are we right now? Like, where do you think we're headed? What are you betting on right now?
Well, it depends what, I guess, real estate category. Office is in depression. There is so much subleased space. Industrial and distribution centers are gangbusters because, you know, e-commerce. Housing's hot because of lack of inventory and lower rates. And that's going to change eventually. And that retail, big box retailers in depression, a small mom and pop community centers, gangbusters. They're huge because they have, you know, e-commerce resistance type of tenants, you know, your optometrist, chiropractor, 7-Eleven, dry cleaners. So it all depends. But in terms of economy in general, I mean, it's all artificial economy. It's a bot economy. I mean, people are spending money that taxpayers have to pay back. It's not generated. It's not a healthy economy. So once the music stops, it's not going to be pretty. You know, at some point, I think our debt to GDP is like 130% now, which has never been this high. But, you know, the rates are low and real estate's one of the most leveraged assets in the world. And it does well when, you know, yields are low. And I think they're going to be forced to keep it low for a while because of the interest payment is going to skyrocket if it goes up. So I am bullish on real estate, but, you know, some different sectors, not overall. I wouldn't say jump out and buy a house.
I love that you brought that up because people oftentimes will just say, you know, what's real estate doing? Like, how is the real estate market? But the fact is, like a seasoned person understands, like, there is no such thing as the real estate market. It's different sectors. There's the things that, you know, like you said, there's retail, there's office. So what are you focused on? What have you been the last few years focused on buying? What's your portfolio like? Is it retail? Is it the small shopping centers? Is it malls? Like, what are you buying?
Yeah. Well, I'm by nature, I'm a contrarian investor. I buy things that people don't like. It's not sexy right now. It's office. Both properties I have in escrow, the $41 million is all office and the $22 million is all office, general office. But I am buying a small little shopping center. One of my members brought that to me. He says, hey, I can't buy it, pull it off by myself. Do you want to go 50-50? I'm like, sure. That was unique because there's CBS as a tenant that pays $258,000 a year, triple net. And as you know, CBS, Farm, Rite Aid, those trade as a single tenant. Their credit, they trade at a much lower cap. So we bought that at a 9 cap at 56% occupancy. We're going to subdivide it, sell the CVS, which will make us what we paid for the entire property plus $1 million profit. And then we got 40,000 square feet free. So there's a lot of ways to add value to property or actually create value by subdividing property, for example, that has a credit tenant. And then also there is properties where there is cell tower income. I teach my program how you can actually sell the roof easement. I just did one on a building in Arizona. I bought 6 months ago. I bought it for 4.3 and I sold the roof for 827,000 cash for a 50-year easement. Yeah, and then I sold the building. It's in escrow as we speak for 5.6 million. So I made $2 million profit by doing that. So there's a lot of ways to skin the cat. So.
Yeah, that's cool. And I'm assuming just the longer you're in real estate, the more that you think of these things. Like, so you hear some guy talking about cell phone towers, you're like, wait, that's a thing? And you dig into that and all of a sudden that becomes an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. And then Let's go to some new investors that are listening right now. They're just getting started. They're where you were 25 years ago. What advice do you give to people who are brand new in real estate? They're saying, I just want to get rich. I just want to get financial freedom. I want to get started. What do I do?
Well, depends. If you have money or you don't have money, get educated, study the stock market you want to invest in. Because even if you don't have money and you network with other investors, get licensed, obviously, power up. I tell you, always get licensed. For a few $100, it's amazing how much you learn getting licensed. Just learn the real estate principles. And then once you study the market, work your ass off, going out, doing your research. When you find a property that's well-positioned on a pricing and also it's mismanaged, you can go ahead, share that with your network, and you know, you bring a deal, take some profit, 80, 20, 30, 70, whatever it is, and get started that way. That's what I would recommend. There is a lot of opportunities in real estate if you learn the game and you learn how you can add value to real estate. And you just go and find those opportunities. And there is so much liquidity in the market, especially people that want to put money in real estate. You know, opportunities are enormous. You just got to do your homework, learn the market, and find those opportunities. If you have the money yourself, pull it off. If you don't, you can partner up and bring your equity partner with some other investors.
Yeah, that concept is so important that people are like, I can't get in real estate because I don't have any money. I'm like, there's a lot of people out there today who have money that don't have the time or the hustle or the knowledge or like the drive to go out and find those deals. So bring in an equity partner.
Yeah. Well, look what happened with Amin, my student. You know, he learned the game from me and then he found the property and then I partnered with him. So I became his equity partner.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all Bigger Pockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com. Using code BP2024. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then, when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the Fountain of Youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com.
Let's talk about finding deals. You know, in the commercial space, as you're trying to buy these big properties, like the two offices that you have under right now, how are you finding them?
Yeah, so one of them was publicly listed by CB Richard Ellis, the $22 million deal. And then the $41 million deal, I mean, escrow, that was just through my network of brokers. It's the same broker that got me Koshman's Landing for $28 million 4 years ago. So when I'm running low on deal flow, I pick up the phone and call the top brokers I've dealt with in the past 10, 20 years. And I tell them, hey, Brian, I'm running low on deal flow. Which one of your properties in you guys' portfolio with your leasing department, you have a landlord that's not, you know, throwing tenant improvement money or is mismanaging the property? And he says, hey, I have a perfect location for you. It's so-and-so owns it for 15 years. He's out of money. He's having problems. The tenants are leaving. The roof's leaking. And that's how the property came about. But typically, I get about 30 to 40 deals emailed to me because I'm on their email list, email blast. And most of these big brokerage houses, you know, they get a listing. They don't want to put it on the public. They want to double-end it. So for 30 days, they'll send it within their network of principals and buyers, investors. And then if they can't get a deal done, then they go ahead and put it on CoStar, LoopNet, or their local MLS, right? As you get more years under your belt, it gets much easier. You know, people, you build that credibility. They know you close. You're not going to ask for a fee. They double end it. You're an easy buyer. And I like to say, you know, I've earned that in the past 30 years. So I get a lot of deals that way.
You know, you mentioned that you've been in the real estate game for over 30 years now, which is really impressive. And it's something I love when we get to talk to a guest that's seen more than one market cycle. So, like, I'll admit, I host the podcast, but I got in at the last crash. So I've really only seen the elevator go up. I watched it go down, but I've only rode it on the way up. And I really like to get insight from people that actually experienced what it was like when the elevator crashed and you had to feel that fear of, am I going to die? Where's this going to stop? And the insight that comes out of that. Would you mind sharing maybe some of the things you've learned about the right way to invest with the ups and downs you've seen? And then what I'd really like to get is for you to elaborate a little more on when you mentioned the economy we're in isn't real, I think is what you said. A lot of it is based on like created wealth that we're just like, debt is really fueling this entire thing. If you could just speak a little bit about how that works in a general sense, and then how you use that information as a contrarian investor to make good decisions.
Sure. Well, you know, I started my mortgage company in 92. I didn't buy my first property in 96. So when I say 30 years, when you have a mortgage company, as you know, you look at your 1003 application, loan application, and you run into a lot of people that had real estate portfolios. So you have to analyze it, see if they qualify based on their income, all this stuff. But I've seen recession from mid-90s and then early 2000, the dot-com. We had another recession. And then again, 2008, we had another recession. So as I've seen these cycles come and go, I've noticed, you know, if you have a credit tenant, you're probably going to weather the storm. If you don't have a credit tenant and you have a small mom and pop office building, you're probably going to be in trouble. So in 2007, I had a $130 million portfolio, a million square feet of high rises in Houston. I've sold it in July 2007. And everybody says, what are you doing? You know, everything's going gangbusters. You're making, you know, crazy money on these buildings. But I was like, yep. But, you know, I had a pretty good run and we're pretty much due for a recession. So I sold those and I started buying. I bought a million square feet. I sold those and I bought a million square feet worth of Food Lion centers in North Carolina, which is a pretty big grocery chain. And I bought 700,000 square feet of multi-tenant, mostly credit industrial distribution warehouses in Houston. And that was Continental Airlines, FedEx, Halliburton. These were my tenants. And guess what? I had barely any defaults throughout 2008. And I had that, you know, $300,000 a month cash flow coming in while everybody else was letting go of their office buildings. And I ended up buying 5 out of the 8 buildings I sold. I actually ended up buying those back from mortgage servicers in 3 years after I sold them. So 2000, Yeah, 2011, 2010. I bought 5 of those high rises back from LNR Mortgage Servicers.
You know, people listening to this right now, you sold a massive portfolio in 07. So I'm sure some people in the audience are thinking, wow, he got super lucky. Other people are like, wow, he's super smart. How do you balance that? Like, did you see it? You knew something was coming? Or do you think you got more lucky? Or where do you fall on that luck versus skill in that regard?
Well, you know, I hate to say I use a lot of common sense. When I was selling my buildings, I had people offer me from Florida, New York, crazy prices on my property without even seeing it. And I'm like, and all 1031 exchange money, right? I'm like, okay, this is getting way out of hand. When you see that kind of a activity in real estate, you're like, all right, it's too good to be true. Just like the 1999 when I sold my portfolio of stocks because it was too good to be true. But overall, you know, luck obviously has something to do with it, but I think timing is important. When you know things will go parabolic, you know things will have a counter direction, right? And I don't know. I mean, I like to think some has luck, but mostly just use common sense. If it's too good to be true, you may want to take some chips off the table.
I remember when I was listening to this podcast before I was hosting it, and Josh Dorkin was talking about a time when he saw a police officer was buying a $1 million house. And this was like 15 years ago, right? This wasn't a $1 million house now. Maybe a police officer could buy it. That would be like a $2 million house now. And he just recognized like school teachers are buying $800,000 houses. Cops are buying $1 million homes. This does not make sense. And like you're saying, Manny, it's the slightest bit of common sense when you just ask how do they do it? And someone says, oh, well, they got a adjustable rate mortgage with negative amortization and like all these bells and whistles thrown on to force it to work. You're like, oh, right. If you saw a car that was running that way, right, like it's this, they took an engine out of a lawnmower and they threw it into a Honda Civic, but they added a turbo booster here and they added some NOS there. You might be able to make it go forward for a period of time, but that car is not going to continue running. And I think a lot of people get themselves in trouble trying to outsmart the system. They're looking for some special algorithm that will tell them when the market's going to change, when the answer might be right in front of their face. Is that the common sense that you're sort of describing?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, homes, for example, right now, single family home, you know, to get a deal, you got to pay over in most markets. And chances are, you know, when rates eventually go up, your value is going to go down. I mean, it's just natural economics, you know, what happens with cost of money. So we know rates been low for 40, 50 years, and eventually things have to change. We're not going to go negative like Japan. I hope not. So with that said, you know, use common sense. If you find a building that you can, a home that you can buy, that's a foreclosure, short sale, that's a different story. But I'm talking about a regular listing. They're asking over appraised value, and now you got to chase it. So that's the thing, you know, that's a speculation. And a lot of people don't know the difference between speculating and investing.
You know, another thing that's come up a lot in your story that I've noticed when you were describing kind of your, what's it called when you're hearing how a superhero was formed? The origin story. That's when you're telling your origin story, was this fact that cars played a role in it, right? You notice other people with nice cars and you saw these cars, and I see in the background, you've got cars there. Is there a special relationship that you have between nice cars and motivation?
Well, yeah, I love investing in these cars for several factors. One, I'm passionate about the history of some of these brands like Bugatti, you know, McLaren, Mercedes. Second, I've noticed a lot of wealthy people do have art and exotic cars, collectible cars in their portfolio as an investment. And I've actually made money on some of these cars. I mean, on one car alone, I made $1.9 million after 5 months of owning it. I sold it for $1.9 million profit. I have several cars here that have been offered few million over what I paid for. But I use them more as a passion-driven investing. But at the end of the day, they're still an investment for me. There are a lot of cars I could buy that I know I'll lose money on, and I don't dare to buy.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, I see your Instagram, and you have a massive Instagram, and you post a lot of videos and pictures. It's phenomenal. It's one of my favorite accounts out there, if not my favorite. You always post it. Yeah, you do a really good job. But you're sharing real estate advice, and then you're sharing these car things. And I always just thought the cars were just kind of like, hey, you got a lot of money, so you buy some cars. But I'm totally seeing you in a new light now. You're like, this is a passion-driven investment. And I love that concept, because like, you can have cool stuff and then know that you can eventually then, you know, like at least make your money back, if not some. Why not enjoy it while you have it? It's not a liability, in other words. You're buying assets still, that majority of the world, you know, I don't know, would only dream of having. That's super cool.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of young investors, the minute they get their big fat check commission, they'd love to run over to the Ferrari or Lamborghini dealer and put that down and finance their dream sports car. But I tell people, I said, grind now so you can shine later, spending the fruits of your investments. So, you know, believe it or not, that power of compounding, you know, taking that one first house I bought, flipped it, bought two more homes, and then that first shopping center, I 1031 exchanged the Whittier property into another one, office building, and then a high rise, and then a multiple high rises in a portfolio I bought as a group. So I didn't buy a Ferrari, you know, till 2005 when I was worth, you know, well over $30-40 million back then. And people said, oh, how come you don't have a Ferrari or Lamborghini? Because I was reinvesting my money. And that's a lot of the investors' mistake, is they, instead of reinvesting their big chunk of income they make early on, they go ahead and splurge. And that's very common. It's so hard to resist, I know.
Yeah, it is hard. Especially when you see the social media, all these people with the awesome stuff and cool houses, cool cars. And you're like, oh, I want that. But you didn't do that. Like you said, you didn't do that right away. You waited till you built up that business.
And that's why we bring it up, because a lot of people see that and they think, oh, if I buy a house, I can buy a Ferrari. And that's as far as they think. They don't think I have to master real estate or become excellent. I heard Dave Ramsey telling a story about Jay-Z spending $250,000 in one night on basically like bottle service at a club. And he took a lot of heat for spending this much money on something that was frivolous. And Dave Ramsey was saying, do you understand that Jay-Z spending $250,000 in one night is like you spending $25 in one night, right? Like, you're not playing the same game as him, so you can't judge him by the same rules. And I thought that was a really, really good point, that there is a point you can hit where this isn't actually threatening your business anymore. And I was actually curious, in a way, Manny, if it's in a way motivating your business, if this is one of the things you do to keep yourself motivated once you've hit financial freedom and you don't need a more money or more success.
Well, you know, it's not the money anymore for me, it's the hunt for the deal. I love taking a property, transforming it. It's kind of becomes an art after a while. I don't buy a property that I can't add value or transform, because at that point, I'm just parking my money in real estate. Yeah, you're going to make money, but it's not my passion. You know, it doesn't drive me. I don't know. I don't think it's another business you can do in this country that's, you have the leverage options and also the different economies in different states that you can 1031 into. I mean, to me, it's like, I don't know. I'm in love with real estate. Sorry.
You almost sound like a really successful like coach, like Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, who said, I'm retired, I don't need a coach. But he just gets joy out of coaching AAU kids and helping this turn this kid into the best version of themselves.
Yeah, I do.
So you mentioned the value add piece. I want to hit on that real quick. What kind of things do you do when you buy a property? What are some of your favorite things to do to add value to a property?
Number one, remeasure your building. Most commercial buildings, you know, the BOMA standard changes every few years. I picked up 4,000 square feet just by remeasuring my building on the water at Koshbin's Landing. 4,000 feet at $1,500 a foot. That's $6 million in value. And it costs you $6,000 to $10,000, depending on how big the property is, for them to get remeasured. That's one. Two, I look at different common areas where I can convert into rentable space. For example, I put a cigar lounge on the third floor at Koshman's Landing. That was a huge patio that tenants didn't use. So I just that and converted to a Cubano room, charged, you know, paid $10,000 a month rent at, you know, 4% cap. That's extra $3-4 million on the resale. Other things is conversion of lease types. If somebody's on a gross lease, and you can go ahead, convert them to triple net lease or modified gross at renewal, that's huge, because when you sell the property for much higher, the property tax gets reset, that gets passed on to the tenant, and the buyer is not going to ding you for the excess property tax and deduct it from the net operating income. There's a lot, but those are some of the main ones. Changing tenant type, taking a restaurant that's mom and pop and put a restaurant that's credit, the either public company or regional, national restaurant chain, boom, you double, at least double your value, because a mom and pop, you're not going to get probably, you know, less than a 7 cap, and a national restaurant chain, you're probably going to get 4 cap. So things of that nature, but those are just a few.
Wow, that's really good. Yeah, really good stuff there. because again, I love this idea of value add. If you buy the property, like you said, you can park money in real estate if you really want to, just you'll make some money. But if you want to grow fast, if you want to be aggressive, or if you just want to, you want to build that wealth quickly, that value adds where it's at. And where it's at is like, the more you get into this and the more you start thinking, how do I make this better? How do I change this? Most people in life and business, they accept what they're given. Oh, they said it was a duplex. Okay, that's what it is, right? They said it's three bedroom. They said it was a 10,000 square foot, you know, property. They're not thinking, how do I drive more value out of this? How do I bring that out? And that mentality I just see in you from the time you came to America till now is just this, I'm going to figure out a way to make it through. That's cool. It kind of ties that all together.
I would also, let's highlight too, before we move on, Manny, you're not just saying, hey, buy real estate, just buy it, find a partner and buy it. What you're actually talking about is at a deep level, understanding how real estate is valued and how it works. You've mentioned if it's used for this purpose, you might get a 4 cap, but at this purpose, you might get a 9 cap. You can double the value of the property just by repurposing it. That shows a pretty significant level of understanding with what makes real estate worth what it's worth. You're not just advocating, get out there, just buy something. You're actually talking about understanding it at a deep level and developing a mastery of it. And when you hit that, it does become almost effortless, like you're saying, right? You don't sound scared about dealing anymore. It's exciting. You have a lot of confidence that I can take this and turn it into more. And then you can do things like buy the cars that you like or whatever other passions that you have in real estate sort of funds it. So that would be what I would hope everyone would take from this is if you pour into mastering this, it will pay you back more than you ever put into it.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the nail.
Cool, man. Well, last question before we get to the famous four. So it's like the last question before the final four, which is before the final one, is you mentioned just briefly over there that you lost $5 million on a property. Can you explain that? Like what? That's a lot of money to lose. Like I can't let you just gloss over that one. We got to touch on that.
Yeah, this was a single tenant building in Clear Lake, NASA, subsidiary of Boeing occupied at USA, United Space Alliance. They handle all the communication with Discovery Shuttle. They put millions and millions in fiber into the building. So I'm guessing they're not going anywhere. They had 4 years left with 2 5-year option. And when I did my tenant interview, and the CEO says, hey, the only way we would not renew, exercise our 5-year renewal is if we lose the contract with NASA, which it's almost impossible. Nobody else is going to be able to fulfill that. What happened? Elon Musk happened. SpaceX got the contract, and I got a FedEx notification with one page in there that said we're moving out of the building and we're not going to renew. And I bought that building for $17 million. I put $5 million down. And I had my own brother, sister, you know, some of family, friends, they wanted to invest with me. That was one building I put their money in there that we lost. And that was very painful. I didn't care losing $2.5 million of my own money because I know I can make more. And my net worth was pretty good at the time. It didn't really ding me, but it still hurts $2.5 million to lose. So that's one of my painful lessons I learned. Doesn't matter how good of a credit the tenant is. It could be U.S. government. If it's single tenant, you know, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. So I don't buy any single tenant buildings, no matter what. I don't buy any building that a single tenant occupies more than 20% of the rent roll. That's one of my rules. Diversify.
I love that you said that. Because, yeah, I've seen investors, and I've talked to investors who they will buy a large single tenant property, like, you know, and they're like, yeah, those people never leave, or those, you know, they're a great company. They'll be there for years. And I'm still like, I couldn't do it. Like, that freaks me out. Like, I need that diversification. So yeah.
Trends change. Even like Rite Aid, I'm seeing a lot of Rite Aid, Walgreens coming to market. And I've never seen this much triple net single tenant coming to market. And guess what? Amazon's going after pharmacy. You know, they may buy Target that has pharmacy. So it's on the chopping block. And consumer behavior changes. And if that happens, look, if you got all your money into 10 Walgreens, and guess what? 10 years from now, if Walgreens is not in business, you've just lost all your money. And the dirt is worth whatever the dirt is worth, but you're paying a huge premium for that credit tenant. And if that credit tenant is not here, you're going to be in a bad shape.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I never thought about Walgreens or CVS being in trouble, but when I think about it, nobody ever thought Blockbuster was in trouble either. Like when you can press a button on your phone and your medicine's delivered, you know, 6 hours later, and you know, you can have a virtual call with a pharmacist. Like, what? Like, why do you go to Walgreens. Yeah, that's fascinating.
This actually supports though what we were saying earlier, because that fact right there could scare some people so they never buy. I just don't know. Too many things could happen. I don't know, right? But what happens is when CVS goes out of business or whatever, and you're left with all this space, you need to get your Manny on. You need to coach bin this thing and ask, how could I better use this space, right? Is this something I could turn into residential living and get it rezoned? Is this something I can rent out as office space or warehouse space or storage or something? To me, that's how real estate is meant to be done, is you're always asking that question, is what's the highest and best value of what this space is and how could it be repurposed? And if it wasn't for that, I would also be too scared to ever take action. It's just paralyzing when you think about what happens if, but as long as you've got that, like, well, if we come out there and, you know, like Peyton Manning sees the defense and the coach called a running play and he sees that it's stacked with linebackers, he's got the confidence to call a pass play. That's all that we're really describing here, is if you understand the fundamentals of how this works, you won't have to operate in that fear.
Yeah. As long as you buy in the right location and the density is there, you can always find a better use for that property. You know, you got to buy in the right demographic, you know, population's increasing. That's why I like Arizona. I love Texas. These are business friendly estates that's always have increasing population year over year.
You know what else they all have in common? Tennessee, Florida, Texas, all these, Arizona, these Idaho, the states are doing well. Californians are moving there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Bringing all their money with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just having dinner last night with a guy from Boise, and he's like, yeah, he's like, property values have like doubled in the last couple of years. It's just nuts. So yeah, he's like, it's all Californians. It's all your guys' fault.
All the people in Idaho are saying our values doubled, and all the people in California are saying my house is half as expensive as they move there.
All right, well, let's get on to the last segment of the show, and that is our
Famous Four.
This is the part of the show where we ask the same four questions every week to every guest. And Manny, we're going to throw them at you real quick. Number one, is there a real estate related book that has made a big impact on your life? Like, what's a favorite real estate related book?
Well, I hate to tell you, but Art of the Deal by Donald Trump. I like that because I just liked how he took a property that was basically run down and nobody wanted it and turned it into a massive development and made money. And the Art of Deal is basically negotiating how to make a deal happen where everybody says, oh, city is not going to ever give you an approval for this. He made it happen. So just a challenge he took on a property and turned it into a massive success. That was an eye-opener. But more than anything, my landlord, Mr. Williams, was a very big inspiration for me getting to commercial real estate, seeing his wealth he's, you know, accumulated over the years buying commercial real estate. But the only book I've written in real estate, I hate to tell you, was The Art of the Deal many, many years ago.
All right.
All right, next question. What is your favorite business book?
You're not going to believe this, but I'm not a big bookworm. I don't read much. Everything I've learned is been out in the field, either through transaction or actually watching, you know, doing a lot of research online, reading a lot of news. But I don't, there is no specific book I would say that comes to mind.
Well, maybe we'll write one someday. Maybe you got a book in you.
No, I've written two books, but...
So let's hear about those.
Yeah, so I have a contrarian playbook. In 2011, 10 years ago, I self-published it. It did great. To this day, I still get great residual. It's sold on Amazon. That is basically the principle, basic principles of my strategies of as a contrarian. How to buy, when to buy, time the market, and things of that nature. And basically, it tells a little bit about my journey, but not a whole lot. And a lot of people read that book. They loved the business part of it, but they said, we want to know more about you personally. So I wrote my second book, Driven, a few years ago, and Entrepreneur Magazine actually reached out to me and says, hey, we want to write your book. We'll pay for the ghostwriter, all that stuff. I'm like, okay. And we did that. And that's Driven is more focused on my biography and my journey. Has a lot of pictures of my kids and past and present.
I like the car theme too with that, Driven. It's a good name. You had a smart marketer there.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have the drive in you. Otherwise, you're not going to go anywhere in life.
All right. Next question. What are some of your hobbies?
Ooh, well, you see these beautiful cars behind me? Well, exercising. I love fishing, driving cars. Those are, I would say, my top three that I love. And then, obviously, hunting for real estate. Believe it or not, I still hop on internet and start searching for properties when I have downtime, kids go to bed. I just love it. Finding it that you know, diamond in the rough.
What it reminds me of, especially for someone, Manny, at your level who still likes it, if you guys ever played that computer game when we were kids, the Oregon Trail, to me, the funnest part of it was when you would go hunting, right? You'd like go out there and you like try to shoot a buffalo, right? So I would just always want to hunt, but then I'd end up with 9,000 pounds of meat and I can only take back like 20 pounds of it to the camp, right? That's what it gets like when you're hunting deals, when you have all these ideas. You're like, I want to take down this one and I would do this and that. But then you realize I don't have the bandwidth to actually execute on 90% of this. It's that same feeling from the Oregon Trail.
That's funny. All right, my last question of the day. Manny, what do you, if you had to really boil it down, what do you think separates successful people from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I would say successful people have one thing in common, right? They don't look at failure as a failure. They look at it as a lesson, and they move up. And to me, I've had many failures, but I don't think it was failure. Those were lessons I learned along, and I took that, and I improved myself. So failures are self-improvement. You gotta, it's how you look at it. So my mental state of mentality is anything that happens to me is for a reason. And there is a something bigger and better waiting for me. And with that, you never look at anything negative, right?
That's really good, man. Really good.
Last question of the day. Manny, where can people find out more about you?
Oh, MannyKoshbin.com. And we have a couple of links for the Contrarian Academy and my various programs. But MannyKoshbin.com, just my name.com. And also, you know, if they want to follow me on Instagram, I do share basically everything on Instagram. I love to share my story often and also some of the things I do with real estate on there to inspire others that, hey, you know, American dream is will and can happen. And a lot of people say, oh, it was easy back then, but it's so hard to do it now. It's the opposite. Right now, it's so much easier to do anything in life because you can network, you can access, you have access to everything. Back then, you had to fly out to look at a property in Houston. Now I get on internet and I do Google Earth. I checked around. A lot of them has virtual tours. It's so much easier to make money now than 30 years ago. So if you power up, you get knowledgeable and you start networking. I mean, anybody can be a multimillionaire in time if you commit to it and have a never give up mentality. So
love it. I love it, man. Well, thank you so much. It's been phenomenal. I love hearing your story and all the lessons you can share. Can't wait to see where you're heading in the future as well. So you're killing it.
Thank you so much. Thank you, David. Thank you, Brandon. Pleasure.
And that was our show with Manny Koshbin. That was awesome. That was awesome. Especially, I love that like value add piece at the end there. I mean, I love the whole thing, but I love that like tangible, like here's some things that'll make you millions of dollars. So it's like, oh, that's great. Yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah, I also love that he has a 30-year plus perspective on real estate. He's gone through different market cycles. He's seen what worked at different times. He's got a very well-rounded and mature perspective on wealth building. And you don't find a lot of people that have been investing that long that are still willing to come on a podcast and share what they know.
Yeah, man, I know. That was very cool. You know, one thing he brought up, and I didn't want to say it in the show because I know we had limited time with Manny today, but I'll say it now. You know, when we talked about the car thing, how like he buys these really, you know, just amazing cars. You guys got to check out his Instagram for the cars, but just amazing cars. And he said it's like a passion project investment or whatever, passion investment. In other words, like he's not buying them to lose money. They are assets like we talked about. Well, I had a similar conversation. I was on the North Shore of Oahu a few days ago to having dinner on this amazing property that was like right on the beach in front of where all the surfers go, like right by pipeline. And it was like this just stupid nice property. And somebody that was there said something like, oh man, it would be so cool to own one of these. And you know what I said? I said, oh yeah, I'm going to own one of these someday. And I didn't say that from a like bragging thing. It's just the fact that like I'm in real estate and I have a passion for nice properties. So the same way Manny buys cars knowing he can sell them again for later, I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to own a $30 million beachfront mansion because I'll sell it for 40 later on. So it's not a liability. It's not just some rich guy trying to like buy a fancy house to show off. I'm like, it's just like, I'll buy it and then I'll sell it for more. It's not even a question in my mind that I'm going to own one of those. Same thing with this, real estate and fancy cars. Unlike you go buy a 2021, you know, I don't know, Tesla, that thing's going to be worth significantly less 5 years from now. But the older cars or really fancy cars or artwork or houses, stuff like that. Yeah, there could be some fun stuff in there.
Cars go out of style. Clothes go out of style. Computers go out of style. But real estate never goes out of style.
Mm, you can put that on your tombstone. Here lies David. He went out of style. All right.
Yes. My gravesite won't go out of style because it's real estate.
Yeah, you can resell that thing later. It's horrible. All right, let's get out of here, man. Appreciate you and everything you do for the Bigger Pockets community. So thanks, man.
Awesome, man. Thank you. This is David.
Wait, hold on. What day does this episode come out? Like mid-September. So, okay, mid-September, which means BPCon's coming up next month. So if tickets have not sold out yet, which I don't know, we're recording this early, but you can check by going to bpcon2021.com. And if they are sold out, check back and you never know, we might release more tickets or maybe there'll be a digital version or at least you'll know to sign up for next year's conference because they sell out quick here at BP World. With that said, David, get us out of here.
This is David Green for Brandon. What do you want on your tombstone, Turner? Signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.